So, Deirdre, tell me about the first book you remember buying.
I was thinking about this because it's actually hard. Do you know, because I remember my mum used to take me to Galway City Library every week. And I suppose there are some books that you kind of remember just loving. Do you know, like I took out The Children of Lear by Michael Scott and I remember being really angry about having to give it back, do you know?
You're not getting the concept, it's on loan and you're why can't I keep it?
Do you know, like just know that like I didn't realise that, you know, I'd find actually brilliant books here, you know? How dare they? But I did, when I was a like about 11 or 12, I did like a bit of extra work in like films. I got my first paycheck from RTE.
Are you serious? Yeah. What were you?
I was on, I think it was it TRX? It was on one of those morning shows.
Okay.
And I was a true life problem person. But my true life problem was I wanted to go to Cool Mass. And my mum wanted me to go to Normal Mass.
Stop it.
So it was through Ashtriogan at Thaivearca. Galway has this like little theatre program in the Thaivearca for young actors. So that's how friends. So it was just all me and my like friends. Me being like, I want to go to the Cool Mass with the guitar, mammy. It was such an Irish Sunday morning problem to have. Like,
it's such a niche specific problem, like that appeals to a certain subsection of society. But so wait, was Cool Mass was defined then as having a guitar?
Yeah.
That was it.
Like, oh no, that's all you need. Do you know, like,
I'm dying here.
First you get out the guitar and then the teenagers come, do you know?
That was fantastic.
But
so a little unknown claim to fame there before you got your later in life claim to fame.
But I got a £50, I think it was at the time, check for it. And I spent it all on books in Easton's.
Oh, good woman.
And it was so good. But I got, there's this series that I really liked by Catherine Applegate. It was called Making Out.
Right.
And I bought a book called Nina Won't Tell, and then I bought a book called Ben's in Love. Because they were like, you know, everyone was, you know, a teenager with a problem.
Yes.
But they were all best friends and they lived in Maine.
Oh,
you know,
very
and
gone.
It was like it was senior year and someone had been killed in a drunk driving incident.
It's always a drunk driving incident, isn't it? Like, what a message to be getting home there.
Well, that was it. And, you know, kind of people taking the fall for each other and childhood secrets coming out. So I was bed into that stuff. But that was when I remember being like, I have my own money and I can buy any book I want. I want to buy this book about teenagers in Connecticut shifting each other. Do you know, money well spent.
But that's a solid choice. That is still a book I would like read now.
Yeah.
I mean, not much has changed in my taste, so that's
100%.
Still a little cracker. That's brilliant. So by the sounds of those books then, kind of brings me into the next question as well. Books that taught you about friendship or family, like, or was it the case you were looking at these books going, geez, me and my friends aren't like this at all?
Yeah, I think that like, but there's both, because I think with kids literature, like you read older than you are and then you read younger than you are. So there's the Babysitter's Club and that's like they have their careers together and then there's Sweet Valley High and they have a different boyfriend every week, you know, because you're like, God, I'm failing on both counts. no pressure. But no, I kind of, books that taught me things, I really liked fairy tales. I think fairy tales kind of taught me about that happy endings don't always happen. And that hard things can teach you something. You know, I kind of really, really, really liked Oscar Wilde's The Happy Prince, and I remember finding it in someone's house. I have so many memories of finding a book I wanted in someone else's house and having to leave it behind.
Oh, that's hard.
Do you know, it is so hard.
Did he never just steal it? Like, I was terrible. If I found one I really wanted and thought, like, if it was off an adult and I thought I could get away with it, I'd just, like, slip it.
Hero.
In fairness, I read some weird books like about conspiracy theories and stuff then that gave me nightmares. So I don't know if it was the Mae West choice.
Yeah.
But back onto The Happy Prince. That's such a fantastic story.
Oh, it's gorgeous. And it's so sad. And I remember like I read the Nightingale one, you know, where the little Nightingale, she makes this sacrifice and she gives her heart's blood and all this and it just comes to nothing and it's for nothing. And I remember I just was up late at night worrying about that little dead bird for like weeks, because you know kind of when you find a story that makes horrible sense to you, you're like, no, but like even though it's fiction, it's true and this could happen. And you know,
what age were you when you were reading these?
I was a very, very early reader. I don't remember what age I was when I got The Happy Prince for the first time, but I know I read, like, I was reading Virginia Andrews when I was 10 and 11.
Wow.
And I remember in sixth class reading, do you know Wild Swans by Yung Chang?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that about three times when I was 12.
Wow.
Do you know, just because
intense.
I knew I didn't understand it the first time. I was like, no, I really want to, you know, get the sense of it.
I want to absorb this.
And still didn't because I was 12.
But none of us know anything when we're 12.
This is it. But no, I always had a couple of books going. And I still do.
Yeah.
Like, which is great.
It's such a lovely thing to be able to do because I'm like that too. I always have to read a few books on the go and people kind of don't get it.
Yeah.
Even people who read, they're like, how do you not get confused? Or, but you know yourself, sometimes you're in the mood for fiction, you're like, okay, I've had enough of that, I'm going to switch to biography or fairy tale or whatever it is.
Yeah, and if they're different enough, you can have them side by side. Like, you can have, I'm reading at the moment a book of Irish legends, a book of short stories, and a Sweet Valley High book.
Amazing.
And
it's like the holy trifecta of good reading.
Well, this is it, and it's like they all have different purposes, you know.
But you need that if you've had a tough day. You need something that it doesn't require a lot of engagement with, so you can just kind of eat it.
Yeah.
Then if you're looking for something a bit more stimulating or thought-provoking,
this is it.
It's a different type of appetite.
Yeah, like you couldn't read three sexy books at once. Like, that'd be overload.
No. So I will say, this is a book-related thing I thought was the funniest thing. I don't know if you saw on Twitter lately, there was like this guy talking about how his mother had just passed away, and she had left him her Kindle, right, of books, because she was like, I know you love reading and all. And then he went on it, and like it was all just full of, like, you know those sexy page ripper books that's like greasy oiled men, you know, and it was like, you know, Mr. and Miss Dominatrix and like leather and kinks and all this, right? And he like took a load of photos of the titles and he's like, my mum's an absolute legend. She left me like 811 books of like some hardcore.
Yes. Oh my God.
And he was delighted with himself.
That's
and
so good.
He was like, you go, girl. I'm delighted for you.
Yes.
But like, I think that's a very specific kind of person who's only ever into that, because I need to break that up with something else.
No, you would. Yeah. When I was a kid, I went on a French exchange to this like really religious family. And they were lovely. They were really kind people, but they were just super into Jesus.
Right.
And I remember there's like this little granny in the corner, and she's very elegant, and she had the little scarf, and like if you drew a picture of a French grandmother, like it'd be her.
Yeah.
But she was reading this book that had like kind of a sexy knight on the cover, and it was called The Flame and the Flower. But it was in French, but I always just remember the title because I was like, that looks a bit. Wow. And I found it later and it was filthy. Like, you scamp.
Oh, love a bit of ranch. Like,
yeah, do you know, like just this real Christian woman sitting down surrounded by her grandkids.
Getting her kicks.
Yeah. You
That's
know?
Delicious. Because like it's such a human thing because people are multifaceted.
Exactly.
You know, you're never any just one of anything. Mm. Ranch is a topic that seems to come up a lot in this podcast in one way or another. But it definitely is there and has a place. Like I remember being a teenager and reading like Louise Bagshaw and like...
Oh my God, yes. Career Girls, Tall Poppies. Oh.
Taught me so much.
Yes.
Like just about life and being a woman, and like even though it's very different to the life I did and continue to lead.
And then I kind of, when I realised her and Louise Mensch were the same person.
What?
That blew my mind. She's a politician.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Louise Bagshaw.
I did not know that.
If you go back and you read her books, you're like, oh my God, they are actually really Thatcherite.
Oh my God. Because
it's all about, you know, like people pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and being...
Yeah, like literally everyone is like downtrodden and coming from nothing and then rising up to something.
Yeah.
I literally did not know that she was a politician.
She's a British politician.
Oh my God. Wow. That's like, my mind is kind of blown
it's
by
like,
that.
What a life, you know? Because I remember her biographies used to be quite like, you know, she ran the Oxford Rock Society or something, and you know, she was a young poet who won an award at this, and I'd be like, God, what have I done, you know?
Yeah, you're looking at yourself going, fuck's sake, what have I done with my life?
This is it, you know.
Wait, was she writing these books when she was a politician?
No, she wrote those books
before.
For a while, and then she like went into a career in politics.
Wow.
But I think as well, like, that her partner or her husband is actually a sexy brooding older man.
No way.
You know,
nice, love inspiration at home.
Yeah, that's
for that.
It, you know, like, she's like, yes, I have a type.
Yeah, she was brilliant. She still is brilliant. And funny enough, I was only looking at my Kobo last night, like, because I wanted easy reads at night time, and I was like, what did I do this? And then I decided I'd buy Game of Thrones and reread that now.
I want to reread Game of Thrones. Oh my god, I was thinking about it last night because we watched the finale.
How do you feel?
I know, I just feel like it could have been, there's so much plot, I think that they should have had two seasons instead of one. And I think that a lot of the character development and a lot of the story arcs, it made sense that they went where they went, but they just needed a little bit of more space to go there.
More room. But so I've decided I'm going to go and reread the books like that.
I want to, because I think it would be good.
I'm hoping he finishes The Winds of Winter sometime soon. I mean, I hate to put pressure on a writer because I understand, like, you know, it's a gruel, but for fuck's sake, man.
Seriously. And this is the thing, like, and they're kind of, I suppose I was lucky in that I came to the books, like a lot of people, around the same time as the TV show. So when I started reading them, there was always a next one for way too long, and it spoiled me.
Sorry, we have, so there's another lovely cat here. So another regular feature of the podcast is that there's lovely cats around, and Deirdre has a gorgeous ginger cat here called Arthur, and he was interested in the Zoom there, so that was why I was giggling.
No, he's a very good boy. He's looking for birds now.
He's the best boy. So you always had another one of the Game of Thrones books to read.
Yeah, and then I think A Dance with Dragons, I found that a bit boring.
Yeah, it was a bit shy.
It was just, and like, because I, you know, every single one, because there were ones that I didn't like as much and ones that I liked more, but I kept turning the pages, and then I got that one, I was like, actually, do you know, I could probably leave it, but I won't, because
you're invested in it now for the characters you do like and that kind of thing. Yeah, because from what I can recall now, because it has been a good few years, there were characters you just didn't give a toss about like in them, and I was like, I used to be, I didn't skip over because I hate skipping over bits in a book, but I'm like, I don't want to read this, I just want to get to the next bit. Like,
yeah, and they're kind of, I read them on the Kindle, and I think that I kind of messed myself around by getting them on Kindle, because there's so many family trees and everything that you have to go back, and you're like, okay, you know, which one are you? Which animal are you?
You are, though. You self-identify. To finish up this little Game of Thrones tangent, what animal are you? Which house are you?
Oh god, I know, because maybe a Mormon. I like bears.
Yeah?
You know, and they're all dead now, so I could inherit.
Take it all over.
My house.
And the bear is a cool sigil as well.
Yeah.
You don't mind wearing that in your banners?
I like an owl bear. I did. One of my friends turned to me at one stage, apropos of like nothing, and was like, if you were an animal, you'd be a meerkat. And that always made sense to me, because I do like peering around.
Yes.
You know?
That's probably part of the occupation, though, isn't it? As a writer, a lot of your work and your thought process comes from peering around.
Just like people on the bus.
What you doing there? Yeah. It is, though. Like, maybe not that level of creep, though. I don't judge. You get your creep on, whatever it takes to get the books out. But it is, like, there's a huge amount. You have to have an interest in it.
Yeah.
In people and the world around you and how it works and kind of all the different facets, especially like I think with the kind of writing that you do, it, you know, taking those kind of things of fairy tales but then feel so applicable you know, to where we're living now, and they're timeless in that way. They have a beautiful timeless quality in them.
Hilary Mantel said something about kind of how like all historical fiction is contemporary fiction because you're writing from the place that you're at now, and I kind of think, God, I actually don't even know if I wrote Tangleweed and Brine again now with kind of all of like, and we're coming up to the year of it now, but with repeal having passed and everything, I don't know if I'd have been so, like, felt so confined and felt so trapped and so worried about my body and about my womb and everything like that in the Ireland that we have now, or if the 8th had never happened.
Yeah. So, speaking of things that broke your heart, because, like, that's what I feel like Game of Thrones, the TV finale, did a little bit to me last night. I'm always interested to hear about a book that broke your heart, either because it had, like, an unsatisfactory ending or a character died, or even just a book that, you know, left you shook. Like, it was really sad.
I suppose there's... there's a fair few. I read... The Red Word by Sarah Henster recently.
Oh, I've been hearing great things
about
that. Yeah,
it's one of the new ones from Tron Press. And it's really twisty. And it did, it broke my heart a little bit at the end. But it's so, like, in a good way.
Yes.
Because there's something that happens and it's really tragic and you really feel it, but there's such a murkiness to, you know, I think that the book challenges the reader to think kind of carefully and deeply about where everyone is coming from.
Yeah.
And no one is an innocent.
Mm.
And I really enjoyed it. There's a seam of witchcraft running through it as well, which obviously
takes a lot of my selling boxes. Me more and more, like.
Yeah, there's loads of books. I suppose the big one for me would be, again, one that I encountered young, like The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen, because I write that, like, with Tangleweed, like, I was told I was only allowed one Little Mermaid because I kept retelling it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, too many mermaids in it. Was all Brian left.
All Brian, no Tangle.
Yeah, so we're going to have to kill some of these mermaids, Georgia.
No! It's like taking that quote, kill your darlings. And just, yeah. Like, kill your mermaids.
But I think because she did everything right.
Mm.
And it's that, and I think as a girl in the world and as a child in the world, you're kind of told if you follow the rules,
mm-hmm.
it'll all work out for you. And she kind of, like, not the mer rules, but like she followed the rules of a fairy tale heroine.
Yeah.
She made the sacrifice, she loved truly, she did her best, she was quiet and good and beautiful, and
it still wasn't good
enough.
Yeah,
it wasn't good enough. And then, like, there's that weird Christian cop out ending.
Yeah.
Where, you know, kind of if a child is good, it kind of spares her time in purgatory. But if a child is bad,
they're fucked.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Mm.
But it's one I still like. My play that was staged in February, Wake, was a retelling of The Little Mermaid as well. And it's one I keep coming back to because I think I'm trying to fix it.
Yeah.
Like, not that there's, like, I mean, it's really, really beautiful, but it's the thing about the world I'm trying to fix, not the thing about the story. Yeah. Do you know?
No, it's trying to fix the situation for her, trying to fix the outcome for her because she doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, or to just explain it to myself, mm-hmm. why this happens.
Sense of it.
Yeah.
There's so much about the art that we create that is us as people just trying to make sense of world or circumstances and situations around us. Have you found that kind of with the topics you've been drawn to in your books that you write, it's you trying to make sense of different things?
Oh yeah, it's all sad women who don't like their bodies, like, do you know?
It's impossible, I think, to be a woman in this day and age and not feel that.
Yeah, but no, and it is, and I try with, like, my books, because obviously I write for teenagers and young adults, to kind of take, kind of, no matter how despairing and how horrible and how dark circumstances get, to, like, and consciously or unconsciously, but to end them on a note of hope or on, like, a little beautiful moment or something, because you don't want everything to be terrible forever, you know. And I think I want to give that to myself as well. I do want to hope that the world is getting kinder, but I'm not sure.
I think we all have to hope that, even whether it's true or not, because it's the hope that'll sustain you.
Oh, do you know what's a great book?
Come on.
Sorry, I'm going to grab it now.
Don't say sorry. Ever say sorry for grabbing a book.
I've got, like, all these books on my bookshelves. I'm kind of trying to think which ones I push on people.
Pushing books on people. It's my favorite thing to do. It's the number one reason, apart from, like, actually loving the tangible feel of a book, why I will buy certain books that I know I'm gonna love it, and then I'm gonna give it to someone else, and there's such an intimacy in that as well. And, like, read this book.
I got this in because this is a fancy book. It's from the States.
Oh, we've got a foreign book in our midst.
Yeah, I got it because I was telling you earlier before we started recording that I was in New York recently and I left my Kindle in the hotel and I couldn't find it. So I was in the airport and I had one book, but it's a long flight.
Yeah, you're gonna need more.
Yeah, so I bought this. It's called Friday Black by Nana Kwame Adegbenye. And there's a quote on it from Roxane Gay that just says, read this book.
That's kind of all you need to know, isn't it?
Yes, I will.
Yeah. Thank you, Roxane.
It's kind of like Black Lives Matter and Black Mirror all in these beautiful, complex short stories. Ooh. and they are so good on male anger and racism and police brutality, but they're funny as well.
Oh, wow.
And there's one about, I think it's the one, it's the title story, Friday Black, and it's about a young man working in retail on Black Friday and how he's the best in the store at his job. And it's like, it's kind of like a Hunger Games of trying to sell people sportswear.
Oh, wow.
Which
is essentially what every Black Friday is.
Well, this is it. And it's just so, oh, it's so outstanding. And also very unique, like, and I kind of, it did actually, I suppose this one kind of actually did leave me quite shook, because I was, every story, and it's in no way ripped from the headlines, but every story was, yes, this has happened. This has happened repeatedly. This will continue to happen. But also, like, the kind of sci-fi or magic realism or horror weaving through it kind of told it in this whole kind of, oh, it just gave it something really, really special and poetic. And his voice is stunning.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I would.
It sounds like such a powerful book.
It's really, really good. I would thoroughly recommend it.
Another fantastic recommendation. Yeah. Okay, so then moving on to, I don't know if this is applicable or not, but a book that made you know yourself a little better. I think sometimes you read any kind of book, fiction, memoir, or whatever it is, and you can see bits of yourself reflected back, maybe, that you didn't necessarily see before.
Oh, wow. There is actually, recently I started rereading John le Garin. And I went to a short fiction course with the writer Claire Keegan.
Mm-hmm.
It was only a day long, but I was on a panel with her in Singapore, and just every time she said something, I was like, oh my God, I would follow you anywhere. Like, you know, I would fully get in your van if she had a van.
That is the highest compliment. Yeah. Like, literally, I'll get into any situation with you.
She just was so wise and so on point that I was like, I want to hear this woman speak for 5 to 6 hours at me. Like, yeah. You know, come on, Claire.
Sort my life out. Like, and I sit down and you will give me all the wisdom.
But I went back to, there was two stories that she dissected, Goldwatch and The Conversion of William Kirkwood. But I had read John le Garin as a kind of, I suppose, in my late teens, early 20s, I'd gone through, you know, you go for the bold one first, so like The Pornographer, you know.
Been there with the runt.
Dark Amongst Women. And I read his short fiction as well. And I kind of just, I didn't bond with it.
Mm.
And I think the reason that I didn't bond with it, though, like, I was reading a lot of classical fiction at the time that I did really enjoy, was that I wasn't ready for it, or I wasn't ready to understand it or to listen to the people that were talking or to empathize with them.
Mm-hmm.
And rereading his work now, they're really quiet and intricate, and I think this is the time in my life when I'm ready to be like, I get them. So like, this is not a controversial opinion anyway, but I think John le Garin's real good. Do you know, like,
hot take.
Yeah. What did he ever do?
You know? Name sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah.
I think he wrote a book or two. You do, though, definitely, like, it's such a strange thing, isn't it? Because, and then it makes like books these living things, because you have to come to them at certain points in your life. You can read a book and not fully absorb it until you've lived maybe a certain experience or gone through something, and then you see it again.
Can I hop back? Because I have a book that made me really angry.
Can you? What? Of course.
I'm looking at my shelf and I'm like, oh, you.
Oh, I love books. What's the book that made you angry?
Memoir by a parent of a child, or an autistic child. And it is called To Siri With Love by Judith Newman. And it was a New York Times bestseller, and I bought it secondhand because I was kind of already a little bit on the fence about whether or not I liked it.
Okay.
And it is a memoir of what I would consider an abusive parent who does not realize that she is being
abusive.
Yeah. So there is a point where she advocates sterilizing her son.
Oh my God.
To prevent him ever having children. You know, that like when he becomes of age, she's going to get power of attorney so she can do that to him.
That's horrific.
And, you know, kind of posits this is a good thing. And it's amongst other things. But I'm a special education teacher. That's my well, I like, I can't really call it a day job because I love it very much. Yeah. So it's just my job.
Your other job.
Yeah. My other job, yeah. And reading that made me see very clearly how people with the best of intentions can hurt and patronize autistic people, and how important it is not to assume that what you think is best is best, and how important it is to listen to the voices of the people that you are trying to help. And I keep it on my shelf, even though it made me very angry, because I think that there is a value in that realization.
Yeah.
That people can think that they are so empathetic and so good. I think it's important to just remember how wrong people can be. So that's why that's on the shelf.
So there are books that get you angry, and with that there is a kind of power in that, because yeah. It helps, I don't know the word, like, not intensify, but probably intensify your feelings or your stances on certain things. Like, it makes you more sure of yourself, because it's so wrong. Yeah. You know what's right.
Well, this is it, or, you know, kind of, yeah, and I think so.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
I'm angry. Like, hey, I'm staring at the book now.
That is understandable. That is understandable. It's like, it's not the exact same thing, but I remember having a similar feeling of anger when I read Kat Marnell's How to Ruin Your Life.
Yes.
And the same kind of, like, anger that of this glamorization of complete mental health decline and drug addiction, and, you know, the monetization of her addiction and her struggles. Like, and as someone who, I've spoken very publicly before about my own struggles with mental health issues and everything going through, I was so angry reading that book that that still, because she's being applauded by this being like getting money from this, like, the cycle's just going to continue and continue, because until she dies.
Yeah.
It's just so wrong. And the way that whole, they make her life seem, you know, really glamorous and really like, this is something you want. And
yeah,
even though she speaks very like powerfully at times in the book about how awful addiction is and how desperate her mental health.
Yeah. And the impact on her body and, you know, all that. But I think because, you know, when I read it too, like, it's that veneer of glamour.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that she's a tiny little blonde woman in New York.
She's
a
beautiful blonde woman mixing with all these people, like, famous, brilliant people in New York, living a life. And it's like, oh, isn't that's so rock and roll. Like, we all go off and do that, and you do that in your 20s and then get yourself straight. And you're like, that's not how addiction and mental health issues kind of work. Like, you know, it's a little bit more complex than that. And, like, I still question to this day the publications that were paying
facilitating her.
Facilitating her.
Like, and, like, after everything went down with XO Jane, like,
yeah,
you know, kind of right away, you know, can you break down over here, please?
Like, yeah. Like, the equivalent of this day and age would be, like, getting Instagram influencers and be like, okay, get that content. We're going to, like, get you to do Insta stories of you partying out for the night and, you know, sniffing some lines of coke. And, like, we would find that outrageous, but that's essentially what they were doing. They were like, do it for the content.
Yeah.
Nuts. So then, was there a book that you've ever read that taught you about grief or loss?
Yes. I'm trying to think. There's Lucy Sullivan Is Getting Married by Marion Keyes.
Yes.
Was a real formative book for me. Because I suppose in it there's so many struggles with kind of daily grief and kind of how everything can be ticking along really nicely, but underneath it there's this, like, hum of anguish. And I think that actually a lot of Keyes's work, Rachel's Holiday, Watermelon, Lucy Sullivan, Sushi for Beginners, and there's one that's really, really, really good, and This Charming Man, that one. I think they are stunning works of fiction, and her voice is so tender and so empathic that she gently and tenderly, like a friend, takes the reader by a hand, by the hand, and look, like, shows them the harsh reality of the world.
Yeah.
You know, but because she's so good on characterization, like, when you're reading about what it is like to experience depression, or what it is like to be a recovering addict, or what it is like to be in an abusive relationship, like, her, the duty of care that she has for her characters is something that she passes over to you, the reader. And I actually think that those books have made me a more empathic person. I love Marion Keyes.
Who doesn't love Marion Keyes? Like, she is fantastic.
She's stunning. Like,
she's just so amazing. And not to, like, minimize it, but I always think of Marion Keyes. She was the best friend I had as a teenager and a young woman.
Oh my God, so true.
Because her voice and the wisdom in those books, and like, the examination of all these facets of a woman.
And where is she on the posters of, like, famous Irish writers?
Don't get me started on that poster.
We had like placemats with all the famous Irish writers, so anytime I quote a poem by a famous Irish writer, it's like from eating my dinner for 6 years. But I would fully love a Marion Keyes placemat.
Like, I would just love an all women one to just replace the male one. Like, and do it, because we have so many fantastic female women, Irish writers, yourself included. We need to update that shit.
Maeve Binchy, Marion Keyes. Who else are we? Throw Sinéad Gleeson on there.
Constellations.
Is so good.
Amazing. I definitely, you on there as well. Put on Louisa Neal too. And Emily Pine, because I loved Notes to Self.
Oh, Thurnie Griefa.
Oh my God.
So good.
Yes.
Her poetry is
Nicole
fantastic.
Hattery.
Yes. I've got the Show Them a Good Time on the shelf as well.
It's in my TBR pile. I'm dying to read it.
And have you read, this is very fancy, this is just me bragging now.
Go with the bragging rights.
So, Paris Syndrome by Lucy
Sweeney
Byrne.
I keep hearing about it.
Oh, the final story in this collection. I'm just banging the book like a little
for
drum.
For dramatic emphasis.
Like a rabbit who senses danger. But it's very good. And it's from, it's the first book from Banshee Press, which is really exciting.
It is very, very exciting.
Because they are just very, very sound women.
No, I have to put that on. I love Banshee, and I love Claire Hennessy, and I remember reading her books when I was younger, and still now coming back to them as an adult, and they're reading so much truth in there, and I'm like, how the hell did she have all this so young?
Well, this is it. And whenever there's this talk of this new wave of dark YA fiction, it's like, Claire Hennessy was doing this a decade ago, lads.
Yeah, like, sorry, where were you?
Like, as a teenager, just, you know, slowly reshaping Irish young adult literature while getting her degree.
She doesn't get her dues.
Not at all.
Not in the slightest. It's ridiculous. But I'm delighted now because my sister-in-law gave birth to twins last year, two girls.
Mm.
And I already have pre-planned the collection of Claire Hennessy books that I'm going to give to them. And just be like, just read this and come and chat to me about any questions. There you go.
You know, the first time I met her, because we're friends now, which is really nice. But it was one of those kind of moments where you're like, hello, how are you? We are both people. I love stereotype! You know? Like, oh God, who was that? Not me.
That's literally me. We're like, every writer I love that I get to meet, I'm like, play cool. And then inevitably you're like, I fucking love your book!
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we're all professional colleagues here. But one of us is just about to be a creep.
I'm such a messy child. I've just realised I've gotten chocolate stuck on my pants. I probably got it in work.
Yeah, it's
sorry.
No, that kind of thing happens to me all the time. Like, and I kind of end up going out as well with
bits on you.
Yeah,
yeah. I would love to be one of those well put together women. I call them the glossy women. They've like perfectly dewy skin, and you know, their hair is groomed, and like they really nicely well put. They can wear white linen, and it doesn't crinkle or stain. I am not one of those women.
There is one woman at work, and she is so glamorous. Like, I mean, there's loads of glamorous women at my workplace.
There's one glam bitch.
I kind of, do you know when you're like, you're just so good at hair and makeup?
Yeah.
And how you look every day is like how I'd look at a wedding if I spent money on getting other people to do this for me. you know?
Literally, yes. Like, there is like that. There's one girl I work with. She's gorgeous inside and out. She's lovely, but like that, she's always so well put together. And I'm like, when I won't look this good on my wedding day, and I'll probably, like, there'll be professionals there to do it for me, and I'll still manage to, like, have chocolate on my dress, or like my hair will fall out.
Like, on Saturday, a man on the loose told me I jam all over my face.
Really?
Yeah, he was like, it was really nice because I've had a couple of, like, you know, those like little kind of weird interactions you have with strange men.
Yeah,
I've had a couple of those recently, so I'd had it up to here. So he made eye contact, and I was like, and then he was like, and like just smiled in this really kind, we've all been there, we've all milled a jam donut into
oh
us,
oh my god,
and gotten a bit overexcited. And so I wiped the wrong half of my face. And then he was like, no, the other half. But I was very pleased because I was going to, like, be around people.
Yeah, and you didn't want to look so, like,
yeah, you know, no, that was really nice of him.
Okay, going on to then the book that you like to read again and again.
There are a few. I really like Angela Carter's The Bloody Chamber, and when I go into it, I find something new every time.
I'm not familiar with that. Tell me a bit about it.
It is gorgeous. It is a collection of fairy tale retellings, and I was in, I think, third year of college when my friend Suzanne gave it to me. My friend Suzanne is like she's been my book dealer for like so long. She has such a wide knowledge of different writers. And she'd be like, come here, this is by William Maxwell, give it a read, do you know? And you're like, ooh, I found a new, you know, a new person that you love or whatever. And I don't know how she finds these writers, but like, oh, but anyway, she
how
told
can
me
we clone Suzanne, we all need a Suzanne,
we all need a Suzanne. I just, like, I know, I feel like she should just be hired as minister for giving books,
like,
to people.
Suzanne could monetize this.
She could monetize this. Let's turn friendship into a grueling job for you, Suzanne.
I've got a job offer for you.
But she gave me this collection. Well, actually, not even the collection. She gave me the Dewey decimal number for it in the library in the title.
Whoa.
Do you know, she's like, it's in this section. This is what it's called. Get it out.
That's hardcore.
It was a book called Don't Bet on the Prince by Jack Zipes.
Okay.
And it is a collection of... Can I grab
it
and show
absolutely.
It to you?
Always.
I love to be, like, preparing my stack.
I love when it comes with, like, props and visual aids.
So, it is this book called Don't Bread on the Prince, Contemporary Feminist Fairy Tales in North America and England.
Ooh.
So it is a collection of so many good people. So there's Tanith Lee in there, there's Jane Yolen, there's whatchamacallit, Olga Brumis, more Tanith Lee, Margaret Atwood, Anne Sexton.
Amazing.
And then there are some like essays kind of dissecting stuff as well.
Yeah.
And the person in that, The Donkey Prince by Angela Carter, was my first introduction to Angela Carter and what she'd done with fairy tales. And then obviously I was like, I want more of this lady.
Yeah.
So got The Bloody Chamber, and that is just a very, very slim volume of fairy tale retellings. But what she does with gender, with sexuality, with kind of the animalistic impulses people have, it's really, really gorgeous. But also just her voice and her use of language is stunning. And I got that, and then I read everything else she'd ever written in like a row, and I didn't know people were allowed to write like this. I didn't know that this was a thing that people could just do. And like, I'm still very grateful to her, because I don't think that I would have given myself permission to write something like Tangleweed and Brine without knowing that this kind of storytelling was possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Blue Chamber is amazing.
That's incredible.
And she retells Beauty and the Beast a lot.
Oh.
She's really, really interested in that one.
I love it. Everyone seems to have their...
their special
fairy tale, don't
they?
It's so interesting. I think when you go through it and you realise, and using that, as you say, dismembering it, trying to put it together and make sense of it again.
And like wondering kind of like where, you know, was it something from childhood? Was it something, you know, what what made this one the one for you?
The one that stuck out of them all. Wow, that's incredible. That's definitely another book to read on the list. I'll put all the books in the show notes as well.
Excellent.
Anyone's looking for details on them, they're there. So we're coming to the end of things now. So I normally like to kind of finish off with the next, and we touched on this earlier on because Deirdre showed me her wonderful crates full of these books, but the next book you plan on reading.
There's a few. I'm doing research for a new book that's going to be out from Little Island in 2020, and I don't want to say too much about it, but I'm doing an awful lot of reading of kind of mythology for that.
Very exciting.
It's really, really interesting. I'm doing a lot of reading of kind of old Irish mythology, and there's so many like weird things in there, or like explanations of the way people tell stories that really, like, that kind of really speak to me. Like, there's one line from this book that I was reading about Celtic goddesses where she's like, there is no Irish goddess of love, but all of the Irish goddesses are weirdly sexual sometimes. It's like, oh my god, it me.
That's fantastic.
Or like, this story doesn't really have much of an ending because it seems like the storyteller got bored after the exciting bits happened, and you're like, oh my gosh.
That's fantastic.
And there's one of the ones is like, you know, Medea and Aton.
Yes.
I didn't realize that back in the kind of old version that, like, when she was turned into a fly, they dated for a while.
What?
Yeah, she was a fly the size of a child's head, right?
Right.
And because he loved her so much, he's like, okay, just make it work. And she just, like, buzz around him.
Oh my god.
But there was one line that was like, she'd wake him up when anybody who approached who didn't love him. So,
right.
So someone would be going, like,
oh, you know? God, that's a bit intense.
That there's this really, really sound, really loving fly,
like
the size of
devoted.
A child's head. Yeah.
Oh my god.
But then his ex-wife obviously summoned a wind to blow her away, because
naturally,
you know, you can't complete with a beautiful fly.
No, I mean, that's the standard, yeah. Isn't it? That's the bar. That's fantastic. Are there any other books then as well that you would like at some point to read?
Goodness, there's so many on my to read pile, but I want to revisit John McGarren again. Mm-hmm. I want to reread the first book in the Game of Thrones.
Yes.
I want to read Meat Market by Juno Dawson. Okay. Is coming out soon. Really want to read that. And I am also very excited for Caroline O'Donoghue.
Yes.
You know, she has a YA book coming, and I have in no way access to this book, but oh my god, I want to read a witchy YA about her, because I adored Promising Young Women.
It was fantastic.
It's so good.
It's brilliant. It's one of those books that I'm like, I want to go back and read again.
Yeah.
But when I saw that she was writing this book, I was like, oh my god, it's going to be amazing.
Oh, and Circe by Madeline Miller.
Oh,
I really want to read Circe by Madeline Miller, and it's like, that's the one on my bedside table, like waiting for when I'm finished the other three.
I'm just ready to go there.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And what about your work? Tell us when your next one is out.
So there's gonna be something in 2020 that I just have to write.
Yeah.
And at the moment, my next book, Perfectly Preventable Deaths, which I got it. I got my first copy of the final thing.
Oh, so exciting!
Yesterday in the post.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's
such a gorgeous cover.
Yeah, it's out on May 30th.
Everyone go and buy it.
Yeah, please.
I'm just reading the back of it here. Sorry, but it sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of about murder and witchcraft and there's twins, and one of them, it's actually quite Sweet Valley High, like, you know, kind of one of them is the quieter, more studious one, and one of them is the one who loves boys and is kind of mean. And they moved to this town outside Galway, but it's a town where kind of over the past 60 years, the bodies of women who've gone missing have been found in the mountains. Mm-hmm. And that's the only time they've kind of heard that town's name before. So they're kind of a little bit worried about it, and they moved to a castle that their stepfather owns. and quickly like kind of secrets emerge and they both kind of discover things about themselves that like bring them a little bit apart, mm-hmm. and kind of test the bond of sisterhood between them. So I hope people like it because it's a bit spookier and it's a bit more genre than I've written before, but I've been writing it for 6 years.
Wow.
And 18 drafts, so ooh. I'm like
a lot of love and a yeah, lot of work it's, poured into that.
Yeah, I really know it very, very well, and I just kind of, I have a lot of, like Madeline, it's all first person, so I have a lot of time for her, and I know she's not real and that I made her up.
If
I'm asking people to be kind to her, I'm asking people to be kind to me. Just hope people like her, you know?
I have no doubt that, very much like yourself, people will, because if she's any way as lovable as you are, everyone will take to her immediately.
Ah, Vicky.
Well, that's it. Coming to the end of it, so I want to say thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been so fun.
Best chats ever, with the best biscuit selection ever, and the best visual aid demonstration of books. Yeah. Thank you very much, Deirdre.
Okay, thanks so much.